Don't you love when Mando shows up and it just plays his noise? I don't know how to do that noise, but
yeah.
Like, whoa.
Yeah, his Mando noise. Yeah, it's pretty cool. I mean, he's like the Clint Eastwood of the Star Wars universe, which is supposed to be Boba Fett.
Yeah, but I was just watching the Fett documentary where they talked about how he's the Clint Eastwood.
He is the Clint Eastwood of the Star Wars universe. And they're just like, oh, hey, we got a new Boba Fett. What? He's literally just Boba Fett. They didn't even change anything meaningful about him when they made The Mandalorian. Nope. It's just Boba Fett again. Yeah.
That's okay. The theory for today.
Go ahead. What are we going to talk about today? I got it off my chest. Not really.
Hello and welcome to the Popcorn.
I want to talk more about the song. You can do the intro.
I'm here with my brother Torval.
Hey.
And today we've got an amazing episode for you. This is the podcast where we cover fan theories. Today we're talking about the Bobalorian, or the Mandalorian, and Boba Fett, and specifically the Book of Boba Fett. There are a few theories for this episode.
So you sent me like 4 or 5 paragraphs of theories for this, and I'm not gonna lie, I didn't read them. I just kind of skimmed them.
I sent you 4 sentences.
Those were so long. I had to scroll and scroll to get through.
No, it was just a list.
Those were so long. It was like a 4-point list, and every point was like going on and on. So
they weren't complete sentences.
Here's what I understood.
Boba Fett is
unending list.
Mandalorian.
Yes. I believe that most of this quote-unquote theory today is just going to be you and probably me venting about our grievances with how the Disney company has treated Boba Fett.
You just watched the Book of Boba Fett, so I feel like you're going to be venting more grievances than me.
Whoa, you just called me General Grievance. Whoa.
I seen it a while ago, so I've kind of come to terms. You know, the wound isn't as fresh for me, so I can focus on the theories.
But how? How do you get to this point in your life? Please tell me, because I'm lost.
No, I mean, it's still hard, but...
There's no reason for me to go on anymore.
I have to be
anymore.
Professional, okay? I'm a podcaster, damn it. Oh,
I wish I had your resolve. I mean, General Grievance over here just isn't going to let it go so easy.
The theories today are that The Mandalorian was intended originally to be a Boba Fett film.
But how can a theory be something that's TV. Just clearly the truth?
This is history. Some people may not know. Mandalorian has achieved such mainstream popularity that a lot of people know about him and don't necessarily know the history that led to him. So we're going to go over that. The second and other important theory for fans of Boba Fett is just I believe I have an explanation for why Boba Fett is the show that it is. And I'm going to walk you through that when we get to that. But we'll start with The Mandalorian.
You were talking about The Mandalorian being basically a ripoff of Boba Fett.
Well,
I just want to say I do appreciate how, like, kind of The Mandalorian and Boba Fett, they have some nice interplay together.
Yeah.
You know, when they're on screen together, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, they're great together.
I do have to say that that would be the case for literally any other bounty hunter that already had existed in the Star Wars universe. They could just put any bounty hunter on the screen with Boba Fett, and we'd all be like, you know, pissing our pants with
Bosk?
Happiness. Dengar, IG-88, Forlom's a cuss.
Nap.
Everyone would be taking so many dirt naps if Dengar ever came on screen. I mean, my one wish is that someday, hopefully, you know, Disney will get its shit together and bring what's his name?
I thought you just realized that you swore. And you're
like,
oh no.
Cut that out.
Oh
jeez. He was in Mission Impossible. He voiced Dengar.
Ving Rhames? Oh no, sorry, Simon Pegg.
Simon Pegg. I only hope that someday Disney will actually get his act together and cast Simon Pegg as Dengar in a live action movie or show. I just want to see Dengar on screen played by Simon Pegg. I think he's perfect for the role.
Simon Pegg would love it.
He would love it so much. He loves playing Dengar. Is it Dengar or Denjar?
But, so as kids, we always said Denjar, but it is Dengar.
It's got to be Dengar. That's all right. Yeah. It's fine. It sounds kind of Star Wars-ish, so I can get down with the Dengar.
Dinjarin. You know? Wow. Oh, that is Dinjar.
Oh, dude.
No, I actually do think that someone, when they chose the name Din Djarin, was thinking of Dengar. They're like, we can't name him Boba Fett, but we can name him Denjar.
I'm really surprised they didn't just name him like Bob A. Fett. But anyway, who would win in a fight? And this is, you know, because we're always pitting classic bounty hunters up against each other. I think this is an appropriate way to start. Who would win? Boba Fett, the deadliest bounty hunter in the galaxy, or some random no-name Mandalorian girl who we've never seen before and will never see again?
Yeah, I mean, I would have to give it to Boba Fett.
Would win. No, Boba Fett wouldn't win. The girl, she won, clearly. Did you watch the episode? Like, she was throwing him around, and he was all like, watch your mouth, cub.
There's no way that actor, or any actor on set, could lift Tamara Morrison. He's kind of a heavy set
or
dude.
Any actor on Earth. No, Tamara Morrison's great. I love Tamara Morrison. I'm so happy that he's having his own little Star Wars revival. No one deserves it more than he does.
He's most of the characters in the galaxy.
All the characters, yeah. He's like half the population of the entire Star Wars universe. No, I mean, I just could not believe that, like, they brought Boba Fett back onto the screen immediately to have him get his butt kicked by some nameless character. Correct me if I'm wrong. I have no idea who she was.
She does have a name. I just don't know it, and I don't care to know it. I absolutely hate Bo-Katan and her group of Mandalorians. They are terrible.
You know more about them than I do because you've watched the entire animated series, the Clone Wars series.
Yeah.
Just full disclosure, I haven't watched much of the Clone Wars. I know, you know, general facts about it, but I haven't actually watched the entire show end to end. I also haven't watched season 3 of The Mandalorian, and I kind of have no desire to, but...
Yeah, you don't need to.
I'm hoping season 4 picks up somewhere far, far away from where they currently are, and I mean, can start watching
again.
As dirty
as they did Boba Fett, season 3 of Mandalorian kind of did to Mandalorian what Book of Boba Fett did to Boba Fett.
Yeah, that's what I hear. Like, that's what it seems like, so I kind of just don't want to watch it. I'm going to see if they... Oh, and also... Despite anything I may say about The Mandalorian, Din Djarin kind of stealing Boba Fett's thunder, I actually enjoy the character and the show. He's
a
lot of fun.
He's amazing.
He's like a really good character. He's
Pedro
fantastic.
Pascal is also amazing. I think we need to start with what led up to The Mandalorian and Disney abandoning films in the Star Wars universe.
Weirdest thing to me is that Disney was making a Boba Fett movie before they made The Mandalorian.
Yeah.
So this is where I'm a little thrown off by you saying that The Mandalorian, like, ripped off Boba Fett's story. How could it have done that?
I never said ripped off. You've said that.
Well, I'm trying to give you an opportunity to explain your theory, dude. Boba I'm setting Fett. You up with, like, a free throw. This is a softball.
But you keep saying ripped off. I feel like that's not how I would put it.
Sorry. So let me phrase it even softer for you, then. So the Book of Boba Fett as a movie was already in production before The Mandalorian even started being filmed. So I'm confused as to how The Mandalorian could be Boba Fett.
Well, I mean, it's quite simple. It all started with Solo, a Star Wars story.
Oh, yeah. That is a movie that exists. I forgot all about it.
So after they finished their trilogy, and they also did Rogue One.
Oh, yeah. They were
going to
do like a ton of movies and TV shows about
they had
Crimson
planned
Dawn.
And were actively developing character-based movies.
Yeah,
and
Obi-Wan.
They had planned a Kenobi movie, they had planned a Boba Fett movie, and they had planned a Solo movie. Han Solo.
And Ahsoka.
And an Ahsoka movie.
Yeah,
right.
they were talking
so they
about
had all
the
these
Ahsoka
in the
movie.
Works. Then Solo came out and just absolutely bombed, which I don't know how no one at Disney expected that, because all the fans expected that.
Yeah, everyone in
no one wanted
the world
to see it.
No one really was interested in seeing
I mean,
Solo's
you
origins.
Can't replace Harrison Ford unless you replace him with Kei-Hui Kwan. Which they haven't done for some reason, but whatever.
Yeah. I mean, I just don't know what would anyone want to see of, you know, Han Solo's younger days. No one really wants to see that. Han Solo is a great character. I like him a lot. He's even better in the freaking radio show. He's fantastic.
Yeah.
But
Greedo, I bet you didn't know that I could shoot under the table just as well over the table.
I'm gonna get you, Boba Fett. I hate you so much. He really hated Boba Fett in that show.
That's like Han Solo on crack.
Yeah, he's like, I love,
like literally
love Han Solo in crack. The radio show. But no, I mean, Han Solo is a great character, and he's kind of a great character because you meet him like halfway through his story,
right,
and you're left to fill in the blanks. I don't even want to know more about his story. I like knowing him as a smuggler who has to reform his ways. That's the important part of his story, is him kind of redeeming himself and coming back for Luke and, you know, saying, "You're all clear, kid. Now let's blow this and go home." Like, that's amazing. He's such a cool character. I don't care what he did before. I don't care about his life on Corellia. By the way, another question for you. Are all Corellians smugglers? Is that their religion?
No, because Dengar is Corellian, and he's,
you're right, hunter. So some Corellians are racers and then bounty hunters.
Yeah. Swoop racers, which
I think all was a of swoop them, racer too.
I think all of them are swoop racers by default. And then it's like
they can branch into
you can spec into
smuggling
or bounty hunting.
Yeah. That makes perfect sense. I'm guessing that some of them also spec into mechanic, because, yeah, you know, Corellian chips, but that might all be done by droids. So maybe people don't actually do that.
Solo bombed and Disney got scared because they were like, we're losing money. First of all, The Rise of Skywalker wasn't as well received as they had hoped, though it did still make money. But
that was quite a movie.
So now Disney is scared and they just pumped a ton of money into Solo and didn't make it back. And they're like, dang, we're not doing that again. What happened after that? Well, there was silence for a little bit. Then all of a sudden, we got a low-budget TV show.
Which was the greatest thing to come out of Disney. as far
a
as
bounty hunter. And also, very low-budget. Look at it again. Season one is extremely low-budget. There's, like, no one in any of the sets he goes to. Mm-hmm. Like, these worlds are empty.
They're empty. Everyone.
Like, and it must have been happy hour at the cantina when Luke went there in the first movie.
Yes.
Because when the Mandalorian goes there, there's no one there.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, he came on an off day. I don't know.
So, yeah, a very low budget. They weren't taking any risk. So much they were not taking any risk that they made them change the name of the main character from Boba Fett to, I don't know, just a Mandalorian.
The Mandalorian.
Like, they don't even care. Just a Mandalorian. He's just wearing Mandalorian armor. That's the important part.
Yeah. Okay. So you think that the plot of The Mandalorian was the plot of the Book of Boba Fett, which they were already, like, filming, like that movie about Boba Fett. Okay.
Yeah, I believe that they recycled the plot. I mean, they may have changed some things, but if we look
at
the plot,
they clearly changed some things, yeah.
It follows the trend of many hitman / assassin type movies, where an assassin is sent to do a job and it's a kid. And then they protect the kid and they have to run from the people who hired them. Like, it's a tried and true plot. And I'm certain that was the Boba Fett movie's plot.
And I don't want to pop off too early, like agreeing with you completely, but I agree with you completely. So, I just have to say that the thing that will always bother me more than anything else about The Mandalorian is the fact that the setup, right? The whole setup, which is just completely lost in the rest of the show, but is clearly a setup for Boba Fett, not for Din Djarin, which is that he is going after a bounty, and then he has all these flashbacks about him as a kid being abandoned and having to grow up as a bounty hunter, having a hard life, which is, you know, that's Boba Fett's backstory. His dad was slaughtered
was
in front of him, and then he had to raise himself with other bounty hunters, and, like, you know, he became like a leader in the bounty hunter universe.
Psychotic Ara Singh for a while.
Right. But that's his whole thing, is that he would probably be, you know, he's probably very traumatized by that and would be very sympathetic towards a kid who, you know, was maybe experiencing something similar.
No, it makes perfect sense for his backstory.
All we know is that he's an ice cold killer. And the only thing that might make him think twice before killing is if it was a kid and if he saw himself in that kid. And that's the perfect setup to a great story, and it makes perfect sense with Boba Fett, and then no, it's the Mandalorian, it's Din Djarin, and he has some kind of backstory about something or other, I don't know, we'll just forget about that. I guess he hates droids. End of story. Right?
Yeah, I'm like, he hates droids.
He hates droids
for
like two
episodes. He is also a foundling.
The other thing that I'm really mad about, then I'll shut up, is that it screwed up what was clearly supposed to be a reunion with Boba Fett and IG-88.
Yes,
but instead we got The Mandalorian and, I don't know, IG-11? Yeah. It's clearly IG-88. Yes. It was from the beginning. There's no way this was not supposed to be IG-88. Again,
this was Disney when they were scared, and they were like, we just ruined Han Solo.
But no one knows who IG-88 is.
Lucrative character,
even our
right?
listeners don't know who IG-88 is.
They're like, we can't ruin Kenobi. We can't ruin Boba Fett. We don't want to ruin any named character.
Yeah.
So change all the names. That's why
they
started
had a clause
with Boba
in the contract
Fett,
that said
you can't,
no
like, it's
established
hard
characters can be used. I'm certain they have that. Quick note to our listeners, IG-88 is another bounty hunter. He is a robot. If you haven't seen him before,
he's one of the six best bounty hunters in the galaxy.
Look at IG-11. He is IG-88. That's him.
There are some slight differences,
but
not many.
His head is like a tap, a bar tap.
A drink dispenser.
From Mos Eisley Cantina. You can see IG-88 and IG-11 heads in every bar in the Star Wars universe, which is my favorite bit of consistency.
And in season 3 of The Mandalorian, they act like it's super hard to find an IG-88 head. And I'm like, just go into
any
bar, dude.
Every single bar ever shown on screen uses IG-88 heads as taps. Even the Star Wars bars that exist in real life, like at Disneyland and Disney World, the cantinas they've set up have IG-88 heads as taps. Yes. It's so good.
And
just makes me happy.
This seems like a good point to bring in just a very small mini theory, which is that I believe the designer who designed the IG series at Holowan Laboratories, which has been canonized.
Mm-hmm. Thank goodness.
That's
where
the IG units were built.
I love
which was from a short story in Tales of the Bounty Hunters, which was amazing.
Great book. Oh boy, that's a good book.
That designer was an alcoholic, like a chronic alcoholic.
And he just idealized the bar tap. He's like, this is my source
of inspiration.
He just could not get
away from the bar. And anytime he was in the office, he was so depressed he wasn't drinking that he just like subconsciously was like, what would be a good head for this droid? Oh, bar tap. It's like if Homer Simpson, you know, after he sees the Clown College poster, was designing a robot.
Yes. That's a good theory. I can get down with that. You know, two thumbs up. Confirmed.
Back to The Mandalorian episode 1. So what does the Mandalorian do in episode 1? He kills IG-11. Now what is Boba Fett known for in the old EU?
Killing IG-88. That's the one thing we know he did. We know he went to Cloud City.
Yes.
This is canon, by the way. This is not extended universe. This is canon. Boba Fett went to Cloud City and blasted the crap out of IG-88, who was trying to catch Han Solo. We know it's canon because IG-88's body is in the junk heap when C-3PO is down there. When Chewbacca is finding the parts of C-3PO, IG-88's body is laying against the wall where Boba Fett shot him.
But in the expanded universe, which I believe people working on the show were huge fans of, he kills several IG-88s because there are a lot of them. And he kills them all. And they're supposed to be like these perfect assassin droids that have never failed.
They're not as good as Boba Fett, though. Well, and the best part is he doesn't even know like how perfect they are or anything. He just knows that they're another thing he needs to kill. So he kills them. And it's not even a problem for Boba Fett. He's so cool.
Well, they're just like gloating at how superior they are. We can't possibly lose. Mm-hmm. Wait, what is he doing? Targeting me? No, he
is he
so
killing
stupid
me?
Oh, no, I blew up.
It's so good. I love that book. Oh, man. If you haven't read Tales of the Bounty Hunters, that's just the best book ever written. It's so good.
It is so good. I'm going to just go through some iconic things Boba Fett is known for doing that the Mandalorian does in like the first episode. First, Boba Fett freezes people in carbonite. He pioneered this new method for transporting quarry alive.
Yes. No one else did that. Boba Fett did that.
9 years after A New Hope, if he had gotten his own movie, what would he have been doing? Probably carbon freezing them in his ship.
Absolutely.
Like, I'm certain they just lifted this from the Boba Fett script.
If they're going to lift things from Boba Fett's life and his stories and the like the old script they were working on, why wouldn't they have lifted some of like the old school origin stuff of Boba Fett, like the holiday special cartoon stuff? Like, why wouldn't they have used that?
Well, they did.
What? Wait a minute.
You might notice the Mandalorian
uses the exact same gun that Boba Fett had in the holiday special, his first appearance ever.
Boba Fett's first appearance ever was in the Star Wars Holiday Special, which officially is not canon, but absolutely is canon.
It's got all the original actors. Well, and everything about it is canonized. Like, Chewie's dad, who was introduced in that, Akachuk, however you pronounce it, he is canon. Yeah. Chewie's family, they're canon.
He canonically loves virtual porn.
He loves virtual porn. They live in those trees. That's canon on Kashyyyk. It was established right there, and it is canon now. And then Life Day, massively canon, right? Yeah. Like, very, very canon.
Yeah.
Anyway,
Then Han Solo. Boba Fett, where? Because he already met him in the holiday special. Whoa. He knows Boba Fett.
I kind of think it was supposed to be like, you know, he's a smuggler. Boba Fett's a bounty hunter.
Yeah, everyone knows run-ins. Boba Fett. Oh, too bad they didn't remember that when they brought Boba Fett back in.
I know. What anyway, the heck is going on?
I'm so mad about
Boba
that.
Fett. It's so bad.
So, Mandalorian is very much OG Boba Fett. I'm talking before the prequels.
Yeah.
OG Boba never took off his helmet.
Mm-hmm.
He had an actual extendable straw that would come out of his helmet to drink so no one would see his face.
Yeah. He's a private kind of guy.
It also brings back the OG Mandalorians. Season one specifically of The Mandalorian wasn't even looking at the Clone Wars. I don't think they were fans
of the Clone Wars or knew about it.
But they did know about
the EU stuff, definitely pre-prequels
EU stuff. Yeah. And now the OG Mandalorians were originally a shadowy organization of ancient warriors who were all but extinct. Mandalorian armor was really rare. And in this, what Beskar is worth a ton in The Mandalorian Episode 1. They're implying that there aren't a lot of Mandalorians. And also, they never take off their helmet. They live by a code.
I just want to give a quick lesson to everybody on Star Wars canon, because not every listener knows all of this. Extended universe means anything that was written not by George Lucas that is not technically canon. But the thing that happened that was really cool about Star Wars was that George Lucas basically made a blanket statement where he was like, hey, anyone can write Star Wars stuff. It's fine with me until I contradict it, is basically what he said. So if you wrote a Star Wars book and it got published, it's canon until George Lucas says no. And that was a really cool thing, which allowed Star Wars to build up this massive expanded universe that was all canon until George Lucas decanonized it. Now, a lot of EU stuff became non-canon when George Lucas made the prequel trilogy,
the prequels, yeah.
Particularly a lot of stuff around Boba Fett and some stuff around Mandalorians. Boba Fett used to have a whole backstory with Jaskar Mareel. It was like his name was Jaskar Mareel.
Yeah.
But then they came up with this thing where, no, Boba Fett was just like a kid and his dad was Jango and his dad was a bounty hunter. So then they're like, okay, maybe his dad was Jaskar Mareel. And then it was like, no, wait, his dad's always been Jango. Okay, maybe his dad was a foundling. It was like a Mandalorian who was adopted into the clan, who was rescued by Jaskar Mareel and sometimes would take on the persona of Jaskar Mareel because he loved him so much. And Boba Fett heard his dad talking about him and sometimes also took on the persona of Jaskar Mareel. Therefore, everything fits. Right? So you get these crazy roundabout ways of fitting things
kind of
in.
Apologetic.
Yes. that's just how the expanded universe had to work with George Lucas decanonizing and recanonizing stuff.
Specifically after the prequels too, there was a creation of tiers. Like there was A tier canon and B tier and C tier, and I don't really want to get into that.
But then the most major shakeup of all Star Wars history came when Disney bought Star Wars and officially decanonized all of the extended universe and some of the official canon as well, which just boils my blood. They decanonized Genndy Tartakovsky's amazing Clone Wars miniseries or TV show or movie. What was it?
It was originally released in theaters, I think. Yeah, they call it a miniseries.
They decanonized Genndy Tartakovsky's miniseries on the Clone Wars, which is very sad because, you know, despite the art style being a bit out there, it's pretty good.
I never watched it because, the art style just looks so ugly. But then I did watch it recently and it is amazing. It is a good movie. And I think it's good that it's not canon because the Jedi in that movie are so ridiculously overpowered. Whoa, and it's really cool. But like,
it's pretty cool.
I mean, Mace Windu destroys an entire army of battle droids by himself.
He's Mace freaking Windu. He can do that.
He doesn't even use a lightsaber with his fists.
He doesn't need it. It's
And he takes a minute to like leap up onto a nearby mountain and grab a drink from a little kid and be like, stay in school, kid, before jumping back down.
That's totally something Mace Windu would do, though.
That's not what he says, but it's to that effect.
They also decanonized all of the Star Wars video games. And that's heartbreaking to me because that means we don't have like Knights of the Old Republic. Lots of people care about that. Not so near and dear to my heart. I just never played them. I'm sure they're great, though. But Shadows of the Empire, I think, is really sad because that's an incredibly fun game. And it gives all the backstory of Darth Vader. Oh, wait, that's not his name. His name is Dash Rinder. When I was little, I read Dash Rinder's name as Darth Vader. And as I was playing that game, I was like, why does this guy call himself Darth Vader? He's like a good guy. Why is he a Darth? He's not a Sith.
Dash Rendar.
Dash Rendar. I'm just stupid. I'm an idiot.
Shadows of the Empire was the one that brought in like the Black Sun and Prince Shizor and Dash Rendar and people like that.
The Force Unleashed games got decanonized. That sucks. I mean, those were good games. They were fun stories.
That character just
I don't like the character.
Like a shaved head, boring dude.
He's just kind of generic, but the story is great. And anyway.
And it was really officially like sanctioned by George Lucas. Like he was like, yes, it is canon. This is Vader's apprentice, even though that doesn't make that much sense.
So there's a great story. There's an amazing story. They were developing this character. They didn't know what to name him. He was going to be Darth Vader's apprentice, he was going to be the main character. And you're going to get more, you know, information into the inner workings of the Empire and the secret apprentice that Darth Vader had. And then they took it all to George Lucas. And they were like, George Lucas, you know, we really love your stories. And we want to be as true as possible to your stories. It would be an honor to us if you would name our character. And then George Lucas looked at it and he thought about it a lot. And he said, yes, I think we should name him Darth Insanius or Darth Icky. And those were the official names that he gave them. And he was not joking. He was completely serious about those names. Darth Insanius or Darth Icky. So they took his suggestions and then they named the character Starkiller after the original name for Luke, because that's a much, much better name.
I said it doesn't make any sense for him to have an apprentice. I take that back because it is totally something.
It makes perfect sense for him to have an apprentice. That's the best part about that game. Apprentice. He would have had an apprentice. I've always accepted that about that game. They always have several secret
Sith apprentices, you know?
Yes, they're always working on
die.
Well, yeah, that's their job.
And they might have to kill some of them, too.
But no, I love the rule of two, man. I love the Sith. The Sith are great.
Yeah, the Sith rule of two is amazing. They're so consistent.
That rule enforces everything they like. It keeps the most powerful ones together. Yes. Man. Oh, jeez. Oh, sorry. This is going to be a brief explanation. Disney decanonized everything Extended Universe and everything video game. Disney then began releasing their own properties. They also kept the Clone Wars TV show as canon. And they began releasing their own video games.
People would be really mad about if they decanonized that.
Now, the Clone Wars being canon has caused some issues, which I think you're about to talk about.
The Mandalorians in this show are OG Mandalorians. They have no real oversight. They can do what they want. They're secretive. There's barely any of them left. They're in hiding. They were hunted down.
Most importantly, until this show, that was non-canon. That's not how Mandalorians are anymore.
Even though, if you didn't like me, you liked the old EU, but you didn't pay much attention to the Clone Wars. I just thought that's what Mandalorians
were. Me too. Like anyone who hasn't watched the Clone Wars would think that, because that's Mandalorian canon.
That's what
until
they were.
Clone Wars came along and was like,
there were basically actually no Mandalorians are completely different. Boba Fett had the armor of some ancient mysterious warriors who had died out long ago. So, but anyway, this show just doesn't know about or completely ignores everything Filoni had established in Clone Wars and Rebels.
Filoni?
That pays the Mandalorians.
Wait, who is Filoni?
Dave Filoni is the showrunner of the Clone Wars and also now the person in charge of all Star Wars.
Which is a good thing, right? Because he's got his fingers in all the pies. He knows all the canon, right? Like, he seems like the perfect person for the job. Or not.
We'll definitely get into Filoni. I don't know at this juncture if I'm going to just rip him a new one just yet.
Uh-oh.
No, I mean, Filoni's done a lot of great stuff, but I do not think he should be allowed anywhere near Bounty Hunters or Mandalorians.
Well, he ruined he ruined Ahsoka's outfit. He's like, I think she shouldn't be showing so much skin. And then we don't get like bikini yeah. wearing Ahsoka anymore. And I'm like, what the heck, Filoni?
George Lucas really wanted Ahsoka to be wearing a tube top. Filoni didn't. So originally she was wearing a tube top, but eventually Filoni
took
just,
over the Clone just Wars completely. Power, and,
just mad with power.
He much... took away our tube top.
But no, he kept her in a very sensible backless shirt with a giant cleavage hole.
I am also, by the way, being sarcastic for comedic purposes. I, you know, probably think it's for the best that he gave her a more reasonable outfit.
I mean, look, they fight with lightsabers. Unless she has Beskar armor, there's no reason to cover
up. It's not
going to
protect her anyway, so she might as well look good doing it, you know? No, like I said, I actually probably agree more with Filoni on that one than Lucas. But anyway,
but what Filoni did, I'll get into it a little more later, but basically he turned the Mandalorians into total wimps who always take off their helmets, who constantly get conquered and killed by everyone, literally everyone they meet. They are not ancient or extinct and are ridiculously numerous across the galaxy.
But turns out, we find out later, all of that, everything you just said, all of that is Bo-Katan's fault. She did it all. It's her fault. She's like, everyone take off your helmets and everyone follow me. I will lead you into being conquered. And she wielded the Darksaber without earning it. So she betrayed the Mandalorian prophecy and she brought them into their downfall. It's her fault.
Well,
she sucks.
We'll talk a little more about Bo-Katan in a minute.
Oh, boy.
The next just similarity to Boba Fett is the very beginning.
We were talking about that.
The very beginning of Mandalorian, episode one, has him showing up in like on a wasteland planet to a bar where he beats up some guys who are hassling some dude. And that dude is like, thank you. And then he looks at that dude and is like, I'm here for you. And he arrests the blue Mithral.
You know what would be crazy is if that story already existed like in the Star Wars universe somewhere. Yeah. That would have been weird.
So turns out that story already exists in the Star Wars universe somewhere.
Wait, where? I haven't seen that on screen before.
When they were just starting their new comic book universe.
Well, right, but it can't be canon, right? It's not a canon story,
They released canonical one-shot comics for lots of characters, including Boba Fett. And there are some differences in the story, but the important thing is that Boba Fett in this story shows up in a, in this case, desert wasteland instead of an ice wasteland. Ooh, they changed that. In a desert wasteland, he ends up going after some bad guys who are hassling people, and he catches them. And then he goes back to this bar where the people are thanking him. And rather than be like, no need for thanks, citizens, he's just like looking up other bounties. And then he sees this alien with blue skin and is like, oh, there's a bounty on him, the guy who's thanking me. I'll take him in. No. And he grabs him and takes him in.
Did Boba Fett say, I can bring you in warm or I can bring you in cold? Because if he said that, then the Mandalorian totally stole his catchphrase.
I don't think he says that. He says, what he actually says is, I'm a bounty hunter. I hunt bounties.
Oh, that's an even better catchphrase. It's like, yeah. Like, I wish every time firefighters showed up to fight a fire, they were like, I'm a firefighter. I fight fires. That would be great.
But anyway, that was the start of Boba Fett's canonical comic book career, you know?
Whoa, and so I think CCC. This is a great organization. We should all, like, wear similar outfits.
I think they took that, or parts of that, and they were like, yeah, that makes sense. We'll just use that as the opening to the Boba Fett movie. And then when the Boba Fett movie wasn't happening and they gave them a little money to just do whatever they wanted, they were like, yeah, let's just do that for The Mandalorian. Just the same thing. We already have the scene. We wrote it. So random side note, we're going to have a lot of these. I liked how they canonized and showed on screen vibroblades.
Yay, vibroblades.
Two guys just pull out their vibroblades and they're just as stupid as you would imagine. They're just blades that just
vibroblades are so cool. They just buzz around in your hand.
They'd
it would
like
just be
more
so
dangerous
hard to use
to
them.
You.
We both loved the concept of vibroblades so much that we, of course, being the nerds we are, would write Star Wars fanfics.
Of course.
And in our fanfics, we would make everything vibro.
Like, vibro would have like
vibro, like, well, vibro comb, like to comb your hair all frizzly and badly.
My favorite one is when Sparky is using the vibro pen and it's just going all over the paper. And Data takes it, vibro pen? Turns off the vibro setting and gives it back to him so he can write.
Oh, so good. But yeah, no, the whole vibro concept is just the greatest thing in Star Wars that had never made it to the big screen yet, and I'm so happy it did. It's amazing.
On Saturday Night Live, Pedro Pascal was a guest star once. He's like, people will come up to me in the streets, and they'll be like, oh, my son loves The Mandalorian. He's on the phone. Can you say something to him as Mando? And he'd be like, and that's just weird because it's like kind of a bedroom voice. It's weird if I'm talking to someone's like 8-year-old son and I say, I can bring you in warm, or I can bring you in cold.
Yeah. No, I mean, come on. It's an 8-year-old. They'll just love it. They'll think it's cool.
But speaking of his voice, that's another similarity, is that Pedro Pascal is doing Clint Eastwood's voice.
Yes,
He's doing his best Clint Eastwood impression.
And
it's amazing. I love it. Uh-huh. And that's essentially what Boba Fett's voice originally was before they voiced him over again by Tamara Morse.
No,
he's like,
good
he's no good
dead.
To me, did.
He's no good to me, did. Wow, he's so good.
Right. No, he had just a grizzled, rough voice, very Clint Eastwoody. And the character design was supposed to be Clint Eastwoody. He wears like a poncho over one shoulder that's
sure
all tattered. Just like
he's
Clint Eastwood.
He's got a Wookiee scalp.
When he walks, you hear the sound of spurs clinking.
Yes. You do hear spurs when he walks.
He has no spurs.
He's that cool, though.
Boba Fett doesn't have spurs.
He's got, like, spur sounders built into his shoes. Like, you know how kids will put, like, cards, like playing cards on the spokes of their bike to make cool noises when they ride? He's put, like, you know, little bells inside of his shoes. So when he walks, it goes ting, ting.
The Mandalorian is Clint Eastwood, and Boba Fett was the original Clint Eastwood.
Clint Eastwood of the Star Wars universe. He certainly was. No doubt.
In the Prison Break episode, which is episode 6.
That's like my favorite episode of the entire show. I love that episode.
Amazing acting in that episode.
Dude. I mean, okay.
Like, this is when I say this was a low budget show. The acting and costumes are like Buffy the Vampire Slayer level.
Yes. So good. It's so amazing. Man, I love that devil man that they've got with them. He's like
That's
straight out of Angel
about.
Or Buffy. But wait, before you get into it too far, I just have to say, you watched the Mandalorian TV show before I did. I held off watching it because I held a grudge against it. I said, what? They stole Boba Fett. They stole his identity. They stole his stories. This should be him. So I didn't want to watch it. You started watching it and you were describing it to me. And your descriptions of this show, as amazing as they were, they got me to watch it, but they didn't do it justice. Like, this show is something else. The Mandalorian, the first season is, oh my goodness, it's chef's kiss. Like, the way you described this show, you described, and you were confused. Like, you were like, Torvald, I just don't understand this show. It seems to be about the world's coolest bounty hunter, but all he does is bumble around, making mess after mess, turning things from bad to worse. Just like he can barely tie his shoes. Like, he walks away from his ship and it gets taken apart by Jawas. He tries to chase out the Jawas and he gets thrown off a cliff. He's like, everything he does is like the dumbest, worst possible thing. And then you're like, it's going to be a heist episode, right? Like, that'll be cool. That'll be fun. But every single person he's on this heist with is like the silliest possible person. They either have a crazy like getup, a crazy outfit, or they're a horrible actor. And I mean, I just love it. I kept telling you, I was like, Leif, what you're describing to me is the perfect Star Wars show. Like, this is everything I've ever wanted since I was little. I just want to see a bounty hunter getting in trouble. That's it. I just want to see that. And I got to say, this show delivers, at least in season one.
So when I went in, I did come in with that feeling of, this should be the Boba Fett show. And so, but then when I was watching it and I was like, oh, the Mandalorian's not Boba Fett.
He can
Fett
fail.
At all. He's like, he's the anti-Boba Fett.
He's a total
Fett,
failure.
Which only makes sense if you were a fan of the EU Boba Fett, because EU Boba Fett is just
insanely
good.
He never makes
good.
A mistake. He cannot
he's so good.
Lose.
And so to see Boba Fett, but the anti-version of him just bumbling around constantly.
He's so bumbling.
Just
he's
losing
amazing.
His ship. Oh, no, my kid is eating the eggs of the woman.
Oh, crap.
That I'm transporting.
Okay, yeah, I take it back.
Oh,
that's
no.
My favorite episode, actually.
That,
the one with
the
frog lady.
Is amazing.
The Fassenger
is
the best episode,
season
hands
two.
Down.
It's so good. And just like, oh no, now we're getting a parking ticket from these cops who know me and like me. I'm going to run away. And
I'm going to run. No, we're on an ice planet. My ice ship is spider. Broken. Well, at least we can stay here and get warm.
She's like, hey, my eggs that you've been letting your kids eat, they're still alive, but they will die in this cold and it's your job to keep them alive. Please do something. And he's like, no. So
I'm not
she
gonna.
Leaves to take care of her kids on her own because he's
spring.
Not going to help her. And he's like, hey, get back here. And then, oh no, ice spiders.
There's crazy, gigantic Godzilla ice spiders everywhere, and they're going to kill us.
His ship is completely ruined from this tiny little detour.
A needless detour. Like, the craziest thing about this, so we're talking about The Passenger, greatest episode of The Mandalorian. The most amazing part of it is that he's not even on, like, a bounty hunting job. He's literally just giving an old lady a ride.
He's driving
an Uber. Like, the entire job is, this kind lady needs a ride home. This kind pregnant lady. Please don't kill her babies. And you know what? The first thing he does is he lets his kid eat all her babies. He just can't stop his kid from eating all her babies. That's like the one thing he needs to not do. And then the only other thing he needs to do is have a functional ship and not get pulled over by the cops. So he gets pulled over by the cops and then crashes his ship.
And then his ship just gets wrecked by a giant ice spider.
Like, all the rooms are destroyed except the cockpit.
He utterly fails to even do anything to this ice spider. Mm-hmm. And then the cops show
up. The
X-Wings that were going to
arrest him come back.
They kill the ice spider, and they're like, "Hey,
you're so
pathetic. We're
going
to arrest
you,
and we'll totally let you go." And he's like, "Well, maybe you could like fix my ship too while you're at it." And they're like,
"No,
we have a job to do." So he's like, "All right, I guess we get to fly to this other planet at sublight speed in the cockpit because that's the only place with air anymore."
Oh,
I love
man.
The Mandalorian.
He's just the greatest taxi driver.
I will say that if maybe you didn't know a lot about EU, the old badass Boba Fett from the EU, you might think that this is Boba Fett's personality, because all you know about
all
Boba Fett
about
is that
is
he gets knocked into the Sarlacc.
Off a cliff into the Sarlacc,
So if you're making a Boba Fett movie, you might make him into kind of a bumbling but cool idiot.
Yeah. Man.
So I think that's
the best description of the Mandalorian I've ever heard. He is a bumbling but cool idiot.
So in the prison break episode, the Deveronian, the devil guy, even asks the question, why are they all dead? Referring to the Mandalorians. It's very clear in season one that this was originally intended to be a galaxy where the Mandalorians are believed to be extinct. Mm-hmm. That's why they're in hiding. It's not just that Mando is part of like a cult and he thinks everyone is gone because he's somehow never run into another Mandalorian before, even though they're everywhere.
That'll change, but yeah.
This created continuity problems that they had to fix in season two once the show got popular and suddenly Disney cared about it again. See, like, they didn't care about the show. They gave it a tiny budget and they just let them do whatever they wanted. But then it became this phenomenon that was just like, whoa, everyone loves this. And so they had to stick their fingers again and start controlling it and using it as a launch pad for other
for everything else. Everything else comes from Mandalorian. They're like, this is the popular thing, so let's use it. Let's get Ahsoka out there. Let's get, I don't know, Boba Fett. Let's make that anyway, even though you already used up the story.
Just because we're talking about other shows, another way we know that if they want to use a character, Disney will force them to use that character, but a generic version with a different name, is that in the Kenobi show, we see Forlum.
It's Forlum. It could not be anyone but Forlum, because Forlum, he is a droid, and he's a very specific kind of droid. He is a protocol droid with a bug head. Unlike all the other protocol droids, he is a merciless bounty hunter. He is a trained killer, and he kills and he hunts bounties. That's what's cool about Forlum. That is the one thing that sets him apart from anyone else in the universe.
He's a bounty hunter.
No other protocol droid does this.
A critical flaw in his programming that makes it so instead of caring about people and protocol, he doesn't.
He doesn't care about people. Yeah. So.
And Zakus loves that about him, I'll tell you.
Zakus is his bounty hunter partner. Zakus and Forlum are just the greatest couple
they're
ever.
Buds. They're
my
they're, ugh, well, they're not so buds. Fun. They're like lovers.
They're lovers,
and,
yes.
And they're so
they
romantic.
Wanted admit it, but they are.
Oh, I think they admit
it. Well, Zakus would admit it. Forlum wouldn't admit it. He's a little too soon
dead.
Yeah,
yeah.
That,
oh, no, yeah.
It's like, I don't care that you're sacrificing yourself for me. You're just doing it because it's logical. Now go die.
Forlum shows up in the Kenobi show, and I had to rewind and watch it like several times, that shot where he shows up and looks at the camera, because I was like, oh my gosh, this is my dream come true. Forlum, are you kidding me? And then he just dies, and it's not Forlum.
No, it's not Forlum.
It's One Jack.
One Jack, yay. He's also a Bounty Hunter protocol droid of the same bug species
and
with the same critical flaw.
Canonical explanation for this is that that flaw was actually something that became a problem on this line of protocol droids, I guess, so.
It's the dumbest thing they could possibly do. It's almost as bad as if they took an incredibly unique, super cool, ice cold killer who's the greatest in the galaxy, like Boba Fett. And if they were like, well, actually, there's millions of billions of clones of him everywhere, and they're all more powerful than him and stronger than him and better trained than him. And he's not. Yeah. They would never do
and
that.
Not
though.
Only that, but there's also millions of Mandalorians everywhere who have his armor and all of his weapons.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that too, yeah. They wouldn't do that, would they? No, wait, that's exactly what they did. And also, his dad is a carbon copy of him, and his dad is more deadly than him, and his dad was a greater bounty hunter than him.
Speaking of Forlum, I do think that in that prison ship episode, that I think this was going to be a team up between bounty hunters.
Boba Fett and Forlum. And yeah,
I think
completely.
That the character. So in that episode, there's a character named Zero. He's a droid who is supposed to be an expert slicer. Now, if you know anything about Forlum,
he's an expert slicer. He's the greatest slicer in the galaxy.
He's the greatest slicer in the galaxy.
When we say slicer, that is hacking. Star Wars talk for hacking. Star Wars computers work different than our computers. As far as we can tell, Star Wars computers run on like almost a punch card based interface, like how old computers in real life used to take input from punch cards. Star Wars computers do essentially the same thing, but instead of inserting punch cards, you turn gears, like you turn cogs to feed manual inputs into the computer.
Yeah.
And anyone who is able to do that and feed information into a computer is known as a slicer. So there you go.
Yeah,
that's what a hacker is.
Humans can do it too, oddly enough. It's weird.
But. Yeah, anyone can.
The droid Zero in the prison break episode, they end up taking his head and using it for later purposes. Now,
that's never happened to Forlum. He's never lost his head. Oh,
no,
wait.
That happens exactly to Forlum. It's a big plot point in the Bounty Hunters canonical comic books. They take his head and they use it for things like slicing. Now, we're going to look at Dengar for a little bit. Oh, I love Dengar. What a great guy.
Yeah.
I think Miggs Mayfield in this episode was supposed to be Dengar.
He is Dengar. He's totally
He
Dengar.
Does not have an accent, but the actor looks like Simon Pegg.
He looks like
to
Dengar,
me.
Yeah. He's kind of underhanded and slovenly and super confident for no reason.
Yeah.
Like, he's a very Dengar kind of guy.
So OG Dengar, I'm talking back in the old Tales of the Bounty Hunters days, he was a former Imperial.
He's Imperial.
And so is Miggs. We find out in one of the best scenes, I think, in the second season, that Miggs is a former stormtrooper. And Miggs was a sharpshooter. All we really know about Dengar is that he holds the longest gun in the executor scene.
That's so. It. Longest gun.
Miggs also says he kind of wants to be a father, but could never get the hang of it. Dengar has been oft described as a womanizer, but also oft shown in storylines to be a family man who wants to settle down with Manaru.
He is the only bounty hunter that has like a spouse. The only one.
He wants to start a family, but their gambling debts kind of keep them working.
Dude, the best thing the Star Wars Bounty Hunter comics did was canonize Dengar's wife, Manaru.
Yes.
Finally.
So these two things.
I was so worried she'd be lost to the ether when they decanonized everything. I love Manaru and Dengar.
There are a lot of things to hate about the official Bounty Hunters comic, which just ended recently. But the issue, Clear and Present Dengar, is pure perfection.
Yeah,
it combines everything about him that is good.
The entire series. Like,
he's kind of a slovenly womanizer, a total pig who just scarfs down food, but he's also just like amazing.
He's incredible at his job. He is such a good bounty
never
hunter.
Underestimate Dengar, even though
never.
He seems just like a fat man with like a headscarf.
Well, he doesn't seem to be. He is. And the best part is no matter what, no matter what, the unbelievably beautiful and glamorous Manaru has got his back. and we don't know why.
Supermodel no one knows why. Girlfriend. she's always got his back. Yeah, so Manaru was a character from Dave Wolverton's story in Tales of the Bounty Hunter, which was always my favorite.
Yeah.
And I loved Manaru. The best. And she had never really been shown until just recently when she was recanonized. She's a woman with blue skin, and the artists in the comics don't seem to know what she looks like because they constantly change what she looks like. But I'm just happy that she exists.
The way Dengar treated her throughout the comics was exactly how Dengar treats Manaru. How he's like, oh no, she's captured. I've got to save her. Next issue. Yeah, was I doing something? I guess I'll just keep bounty hunting. I'm not saving anyone.
There's like a thing they established in the comics where it's like, if you don't bring us the bounty, Dengar, then Jabba will feed Manaru to the Rancor.
Yeah, and then he's like, he's gotta do that.
Manaru!
He never does it. He never
he
does
totally
it. He never
fails
helps.
To get that bounty. And then later he's with Manaru. She must have just gotten out herself.
She got out herself, and that's so Manaru and Dengar. That's what they do. Like, he always leaves her to her own devices, and she's always there to back him up. That's their thing.
So
they're the most unhealthy couple. I love them.
Miggs Mayfield has a robot arm on his backpack. Now, Dengar used to be a cyborg.
He sure did.
If that's related. But here's the thing about Dengar. Dengar used to just have RoboCop's backstory, kind of.
Yeah.
It wasn't necessarily the best backstory.
Policeman who was cyborged.
When they did the canonical Bounty Hunters comic, for some reason, they stole
his backstory and
gave it to a new character called Valence.
Who the heck is Valence?
No one knows.
Mary Sue Bounty Hunter.
He's like a Mary Sue. He's somehow connected to all the important people. He's like Han Solo's best friend.
Yeah, he's Han Solo's best buddy. And he also knows all the Bounty Hunters. He works with them. They're scared of him. They think he's like really powerful.
Oh, Valence is so powerful. Now, he's a total poochie.
Oh, Darth Vader loves him. Darth Vader like goes out of his way to catch him and like fix him and like baby him and coddle him. I hate Valence.
And when he finally
so much.
Comes back in the final issue to the Bounty Hunters, who, like, Valence has been separated from them for the majority of the series. And this is the final issue.
He hasn't been a bounty hunter for like 30 issues by this.
He comes back and they all hug him. They're like,
they love Valence. They're
back.
Like, come back to the full Valence.
And like, Zakuz is hugging him. Zakuz doesn't even like him.
No.
It makes sense. Like, there's some other random characters like Losha and her wife. Now, one character who I thought was original, who actually isn't, is this gladiator named Tasu Leech, who always fights with Bosk.
Wait, so that guy existed already?
Yeah. When I was rewatching The Force Awakens, he's this ugly pirate who shows up to fight Han Solo in that scene where, like, the squid creatures are running around.
Well, that's weird.
I was but doesn't he
canon
die in
character.
This scene? It turns out he survives.
I don't count the sequels as canon, though. They're not. They're everything that Mandalorian is doing right now is effectively decanonizing the sequels as much as it can.
So I think that they wanted to bring back Dengar for the Miggs Mayfield character, but then they couldn't because Disney told them they had to use generic versions of the characters. Now, is this a good time for our Hrothgar Deng theory, just because we're talking about Dengar?
Yeah, so Dengar, like we said, he's a bounty hunter. The reason he's so important to us is because he's one of the original bounty hunters. He actually appeared in the second Star Wars movie, The Empire Strikes Back.
One of the original bounty hunters was, of course, Boba Fett. Then there was a very tall, unmoving piece of metal, which was IG-88.
Yeah,
there
with
were
like
two
a
random
beer tap
bug
for a head.
Guys. And then, of course, everyone remembers Bosk because he actually had a spoken line.
It's a good line.
And Admiral Piet talks to him. And then
we don't need that scum.
Random fat old man.
The fat old man covered in toilet paper. He's just like fat and he's just got toilet paper all over him. Oh, man. And his ship is shaped like a toilet seat. The punishing one.
But who's Hrothgar Deng?
Essentially, the theory is that Dengar, this random guy who was in the background of one scene in the original Star Wars movies and then went on to, you know, be sometimes represented in the comics and the extended universe stuff.
And a featured player in Star Wars
in
Battlefront.
Star Wars Battlefront, the new one, but not the new sequel. The theory is that somebody somewhere on the production team for The Force Awakens wanted to keep Dengar alive.
Well, that's what I would have done. If I was involved in any way, that would be my goal.
There's one person who wanted nothing more than to establish that their favorite background character from the original series did not die and is still around all these years later. And if you look closely during the scenes on the planet Kijimi, which is the planet that gets destroyed, one of the background characters, he's got like this weird, bald, melty looking face, and he's wearing like kind of brown armor, but it's like built into his body. Like he's like a robot man. And, you know, those are kind of like all Dengar characteristics, like big, fat, melty, bald face and brown armor. And turned out that background character was given the name Hrothgar Deng.
They release these encyclopedias with pictures, you know, they've done it for a long time. They're canonical usually, and they explain different side characters in the movie. One of them talked about Hrothgar Deng and didn't say much about him, except that he is a Corellian bounty hunter.
And that he had kept himself alive all these years with cybernetic surgeries and enhancements, which is something we know about Dengar from the extended universe, and that possibly he had changed his name. There's two other things. One is that there's a reference book published in 2021, which is a different book than the one you were talking about. It's called Din Djarin and Other Characters of the Underworld, which described that there is a rumor in the Star Wars universe that Hrothgar Deng is Dengar. In one of the comics, they're listing the names of the people who were on planet Kijimi before it exploded. And one of the names on that list is not Hrothgar Deng, it's Dengar. Whoa. Like they say Dengar was on the planet.
What?
So there's also a comic book page. I don't know exactly which character she's talking to, but Rey is talking to, like, Rey Skywalker, which is not her last name, but that's what she calls herself.
It is now. She got real confused.
She's, yeah. Oh my gosh. She got hit on the head. Rey is talking to this guy. And he is just Hellboy. Like, he's just like a big red dude with like shaved off horns.
He's a Deveronian, probably.
He must be a Deveronian, but he's clearly Hellboy. And she's like trying to reassure him because he's just caught the guy they were trying to track down. And she's like, of course, think about it. You've caught the great Moebin Faltus. You're clearly one of the greatest bounty hunters he's ever faced. This Hellboy guy says, really? Which other bounty hunters has he faced? And Rey says, oh, you know, most of the greats. Hrothgar Deng, Boba Fett, Karsantin, Amiama, and then Hellboy, he starts repeating her, and he's like, oh, wow, really? You think I've done better than that? Wow. And then he repeats her. He says, Dengar, Boba Fett, Carissa, wait a minute. So he, he without knows. Like subconsciously, just knew that Hrothgar Deng is Dengar. Like he just flipped the names, and that has to have been intentional. There's no way they could have written that by accident. And that comic is 100% canon. And then another one in Dark Force Rising, one of the older Timothy Zahn Star Wars books, Mara Jade kills a bounty hunter who's posing as Dengar. And then when they check his ID has the name Dengar Hroth on it. So, you know, Dengar, Hrothgar Deng, changing identities, Dengar, Hroth.
That's deep lore. I appreciate whoever came up with Hrothgar Deng and gave him that name. Dude, that's like my favorite kind of theory. It's like not mainstream at all.
Nope, it's incredibly hidden and only involving random side characters. I just love that Hrothgar Deng, the man, the myth, the legend, Dengar lives on. It makes my heart swell with gladness. All right, sorry, we can get back on track now. In season one, I loved that they brought Fennec in. She was a one-off, one-episode character. I thought she was amazing, and she was a clear callback to Zam Wassell, Jango Fett's partner. She was a sharpshooter, and she was a shapeshifter, and she unfortunately died like right away. But she was one of my favorite characters that's ever existed in Star Wars. I love Zam. Yeah. And Zam, I love so Zam cool. And Jango. I think they're just amazing. And I thought it was an amazing and cute callback that they brought back Zam spiritually in Fennec.
Yeah.
I thought it was a nice callback. And I was like, that's great. You know, they can never bring back Zam, but it's a nice tip of the hat just to remind us that they know who Zam is. Well, but then in season two, they brought Fennec back. And not only is she back, she's Boba Fett's bestest buddy in the whole wide world. It's Jango and Zam back together going on adventures, which is everything I've ever wanted from Star Wars. I've always wanted to see more Jango and Zam. I think they're just the cutest little bounty hunting couple that isn't Zakus and Forlum.
Even though they just like ruthlessly murder each other.
I know. It's so sad. Either way, Fett and Fennec together is like, it makes my heart sing. It's Zam and Jango all over again. I'm so happy.
One random Easter egg having to do with Zam. In the Clone Wars show, in one of the episodes with young Boba Fett, when Ara Singh has become his surrogate mother figure, and she's a total psycho who abuses him, and she's trying to get him to be like a bad murderer, and he doesn't really want to be. She tries to assassinate someone, and I'm sure this is like subconsciously she's trying to get into Boba's head. She tries to assassinate someone with poisonous centipedes.
What? Oh, that's his dad's last job.
That's like Zam and Jango. That's what they do.
That's what they do. Yeah, they love the poisonous centipedes.
She's like, I'm your new parent now. I'm the one with the poison centipedes. Do what I say.
Wow. Anyway. That's pretty great. One thing in season two that I wanted to talk about was the introduction of Cobb Vane.
Cobb Vanth?
Yes, Cobb Vanth. Sorry. I hate that Cobb Vanth is so similar in my mind to Cad Bane. Maybe it's not. Maybe it's just my brain not working right. But I cannot keep those two names separate from each other. And the worst part is they're like two of the few characters that actually have a scene together. Yes. So it makes it even more confusing to me.
That was my favorite scene of the entire Book of Boba Fett. I rewatched
it. It's good. It's a great scene. Too bad they had to freaking ruin it with the after the credits scene at the very end. But
anyway. I know. Freaking, so mad.
Well, we'll talk about that later. How do you feel about Cobb Vanth? Is he a good character? Does he make sense?
No. Apparently some people like him. I hate Cobb Vanth. Can't stand the guy. He shows up and it's like he's wearing Boba Fett's armor.
I know.
And you're just like, excuse me?
It doesn't even fit him.
Like, you bring back Boba Fett's armor and put it on this random like dude who, can't even wear it right.
I will say that I appreciate Cobb Vanth. They clearly brought back elements of Boba Fett's history straight out of the EU. And to me, Cobb Vanth
is Jodo Cast.
Jodo Cast. Yes. And Jodo Cast was like a smug, smirky, loser ass jerk who always wanted to take all the credit for Boba Fett in the extended universe. He thought he was just as good as Boba Fett. He always wanted, all the time he was saying, that bounty, that was me. I did it. It was actually Boba Fett that did it, right? He was taking credit for everything Boba Fett did. And then after Boba Fett fell in the Sarlacc pit, he went and got Boba Fett's armor and started wearing it. He was trying to take Boba Fett's entire life. So Boba Fett dug his way out, hunted down Jodo Cast, and murdered the crap out of him and took his armor back because Jodo Cast is a jerk.
Wow. Jodo Cast, I believe, was originally created for the Star Wars role-playing game, where they created generic versions of all the six bounty hunters because you could like kill them in the role-playing game couldn't use the role.
That's a fun idea, yeah. I find it extremely baffling that Boba Fett was apparently just like... apparently he had already gotten like back on his feet.
Yeah,
he'd done his whole thing with the sand people. He had saved Fennec, gotten his ship, and was just kind of hanging out on Tatooine doing nothing really, except like watching Din Djarin. He somehow didn't notice that like one town over from him was a guy who was famous for being like the big sheriff in town with the Mandalorian armor, which happened to be the great Boba Fett's armor.
Another world.
Yes, he was famous on another planet.
Well, I guess she had come from Tatooine, but like just a random pregnant lady just trying to get home to her husband knew about this guy wearing Mandalorian armor.
This Mandalorian sheriff, yes. And like specifically the armor he's wearing would be recognized by anybody as Boba Fett's armor. Except, wait a minute, the Mandalorian, Din Djarin, does not recognize this as Boba Fett's armor. Yeah. Like, he has no idea whose armor this is, and when Boba Fett himself comes to claim it, he doesn't know who Boba Fett is. Which, I refuse to believe in a Star Wars universe where the bounty hunter Mandalorian in this universe does not know about Boba Fett. It just makes no sense. Yeah, sure. Maybe not everybody knows about Boba Fett. But I got to tell you, smugglers would know about him. Lawbreakers would know about him. And yeah, bounty hunters would know about him. And you know who else would know about him? Mandalorians. He would be a legend in those circles. I'm sure you've heard the name Dog the Bounty Hunter, right? Like in real life.
Yeah, I know Dog.
Yeah. Everyone's heard of Dog the Bounty Hunter. And he's just like some guy. he's kind of the Boba Fett of our world. Boba Fett would be that of the Star Wars universe. Everyone would know him. Everyone would know his armor. Yeah. Like, that's his thing. And it just doesn't make sense to me that the Mandalorian didn't immediately recognize that armor when Cobb Vanth was wearing it. And he didn't immediately recognize Boba Fett, who came to claim it. And Boba Fett had to be like, okay, I'll pull up my old chain code. This is my dad, Jango, and he was a bounty hunter, and I'm a bounty hunter. And then he's like, oh, yeah, I see. I guess I just never heard of you. And I'm like, no, this makes no sense. This is stupid.
It makes sense that he wouldn't recognize him without the armor.
Right, but when he says I'm Boba Fett, he should have been like, oh, you're Boba Fett.
And that was my main issue, is that I want this series finally bringing Boba Fett back to pay respect to Boba Fett, right? Yeah, I want the people to feel the way I do when I see Boba Fett finally back. I want people to be Boba Fett? Like, what?
Right.
Like, and in the old expanded universe, whenever Boba Fett showed up anywhere, everyone recognized
him.
They were terrified of him.
Everyone just, like, would run. Yeah. No, and this is the problem.
Yeah,
and honestly,
it's kind of ridiculous how much of a celebrity he was in the old EU, because he really is just a bounty hunter. But
I know. He's just a guy. He's just, like, hunts bounties. But I think that the new trilogy failed the exact same way that the Book of Boba Fett failed, which is where you can see that Disney must have gotten their fingers in it. Which is that it does not do fan service.
Right.
The only reason to bring back something that is near and dear to fans' hearts from decades ago is fan service. You don't bring it back to, like, change everything or to, like, forget or to rewrite the old history.
Yeah.
You bring it back because you're going to play to the hearts of the fans of this thing to make money.
Fans to make money. Give them
And that's fine because the fans love it. The fans want to be exploited in that way. I want to be exploited in that way. I want to see Boba Fett and then watch everyone on screen just run and just, like, you know, poop their pants because Boba Fett's on screen. Right? Like, I want that to happen because, like, I do that. Like, I got to change my pants every time Boba Fett's on screen. No, it's just so annoying that somebody could make a show about a character like this and not realize it's all about the fan service. And it's just been like, this has clearly been the problem since even in The Mandalorian. It becomes more of a problem in the Book of Boba Fett, but, like, they brought back Boba Fett, but they didn't do him justice. They didn't play to what the fans wanted, and it's just sad.
I mean, like, I was overjoyed to see Boba Fett back. And when he takes out the stormtroopers, he even uses his knee darts. Like, those are so stupid, but he uses them.
He uses
so
knee
great.
Darts. Well, his fight with the stormtroopers was great.
Season 2. Suddenly, Star Wars is popular again, and Disney feels the need to ruin it by becoming interested. I actually do like most of Season 2.
Yeah, most of
it's mostly good.
There's a few
things that bother me, but... You can see a lot more executive meddling here and less freedom to kind of do whatever.
And also, like, a bigger budget.
Yeah, a way bigger budget. They bring Filoni back in, and Filoni is like...
Oh, and you know this, because you were there.
Yeah, I know all the things. Filoni is like, okay, what do I do first? Well, I have to retcon season one to fit back in with the canon of my Clone Wars series.
All of the changes to the Mandalorian people... Those kind of came about due to Filoni. He was the one heading up the Clone Wars. And
I think it's just because Filoni didn't know anything about the Mandalorian.
Well, no,
he didn't know the EU.
He just knew that they were, like, you know, stormtroopers, right? He's like, okay, disposable people, I can have fight.
I mean, so
right?
What Filoni did in the first episode that involves Mandalore was akin to having Boba Fett say, I'm not a bounty hunter.
Oh, gosh. We're jumping the gun.
In the Clone Wars, the first time you go to Mandalore... They meet the prime minister, and no one wears helmets. They're like, we are a peaceful planet who does not engage
weapons
in
armor.
Yeah,
what?
I know. It's so weird.
My gosh.
And they're like, well, in the past we were warlike, but that is a cult called the Death Watch who we expelled from the Mandalore system. Just like everything you know about Mandalorians is not true. They're the opposite of that. So season two, they brought Filoni back, and he has to now retcon season one to fit with his canon of the Clone Wars. He brings back Death Watch, only now they're called the Night Owls, but whatever, they're Death Watch. Oh, he brings Bo-Katan back. She was a high-ranking member of Death Watch in the Clone Wars. And they quickly explain that there are tons of Mandalorian factions all over. They're quite common.
Yeah.
Somehow
they're
Mando
explaining
just
this
never
to Din Djarin, who's like, what? Like,
yeah. And then he shits all over the OG Mandos by immediately having Bo-Katan call them a cult.
Yes.
Excuse me, Bo, you are literally part of a sadistic death cult called Death Watch who worships a black lightsaber. She is now technically part of the Night Owls, but they still worship the black lightsaber. Like,
they
they're
sure
way more of a cult than Din Djarin is.
Well, Din Djarin's
okay, they're pretty,
pretty
cultish.
They,
but in like
a
cool, like
a
like the way
things.
People kind
of
like the old Jedi,
this is
the
way.
Jedi code. I like the Mandalorians. I like that they have, you know,
no,
they always keep
I
their
like
helmets on, they're honorable.
It's perfect to have them be like the, like I said, the ultimate foil to the Jedi, right? Because they have their own code, they have their own traditions, but all their traditions are centered around like the opposite of the Jedi. They hate the Jedi.
War,
they don't like
fighting.
The Jedi.
Weapons are a part of my religion.
Yeah, exactly.
I love that line. So yeah, they're an outlier cult. Mando lives by a code and never takes off his helmet, but all the other Mandalorians take him off all the time.
Wait, what theory are we talking about now?
I'm sorry. I'm just like...
Yeah, we're just venting. Okay.
What does Filoni do? He also brings back Ahsoka. Of course he brings back his star character, and that's not
Makes
bad.
Sense.
I
She's
like Ahsoka.
His character. It's fine. Ahsoka's great. I don't like live-action Ahsoka as much as I like cartoon Ahsoka.
Live-action Ahsoka, I feel like...
I don't know. I'll give her a chance, I guess.
She's not snippy, and I know she's
right,
supposed
exactly.
to be older, but I feel like they told the actor she's a badass Jedi master,
right.
and that's all she plays. It's just like, she's just really serious Jedi master.
There are a few instances of good fan service in The Mandalorian after they bring back Boba Fett. Like, for example, when they raid that Imperial facility.
Yeah. Let's just say they might recognize my face.
Yeah, that's good. And then when Boba Fett uses Jango's seismic charges again. Oh, so I have strong feelings about Jango's seismic charges.
Oh, do tell.
I haven't told you. I hated the Clone Wars for having Jango Fett use seismic charges in space. That makes no sense. These are seismic charges. They create a concussive blast in a medium. A medium
no
of air.
A concussive blast in space.
There isn't. There's no such thing unless they're full of like an entire planet's worth of air that they expand around them before exploding. They couldn't do this. They could not do what they do. And they make this like iconic sound when they go off. They go, which there'd be no sound. They're in space. They're in freaking space.
Right.
They've always bugged the crap out of me. However,
you have to accept that things make sound in space in Star Wars.
Yes,
for some
reason. You got to accept a lot of things. And, you know, I may have felt super strongly about that when I was like 11 and the movies came out. I've clearly gotten over it, as you can tell. I don't care anymore. I'm not yelling about it right now. But I really love that they brought them back just because this is like an old piece of Jango. And I love that they've used them twice now and each time has been on a planet. They aren't using them in space, which just makes me so happy. They understand the seismic charges. I'm so happy.
Blasters work in space. And that is a superheated just bolt of gas that is somehow held together with a magnetic field. Maybe the seismic charges hold together some sort of atmosphere in a magnetic field.
Yeah, they have to do something like that. It's so silly to me. Yeah. But like I said, I've gotten over it. I understand that in Star Wars they do things like this. So a bad fan service was the instant Fett is back in his ship with the Mandalorian. Fett just takes off his helmet. He just takes it off and starts flying around helmetless.
It's like,
Fett doesn't fly helmetless.
We have waited 40 years. He just got the armor back. He had freaking Cobb Vanth was wearing. Don't have him take off his helmet. Keep the helmet on. That's Boba Fett.
This isn't the kind of guy he is. Like, and I get it's not a religious thing for him. He's not a Mandalorian. Don't get me wrong. It is because of who he is. like, so in motorcycle terminology, there's something called ATG ATT. It means all the gear all the time. And if you're an all the gear all the time kind of guy, that means anytime you get on your motorcycle, you wear everything. You wear the, you know, leather jacket with the shoulder guards. You wear the helmet. You wear every piece of gear to protect you if you're ever going to crash. And Boba Fett is an all the gear all the time kind of guy. He wouldn't fly without his helmet on. He wouldn't fly without his armor on because he is a freaking bounty hunter who's ready for action all the time.
Yes. One thing I did like about the Slave One scene is that they finally show how it works. The entire middle section of the ship rotates in a ball.
It rotates. So the one thing that confused me about this was that they have the middle section of the ship rotating, but we now know that the cockpit does not rotate.
And when it lands, you are sitting upside down and backwards.
Yes. So this has been a point of contention for years because fans have always said it makes no sense for the cockpit of that ship not to be in some sort of gyroscopic mechanism that rotates to keep the pilot in a sitting position. And I've always contended that no, clearly the pilot sits backwards and upside down when it lands.
He does.
And I'm glad to finally be justified. I'm glad that I was right. All along, I've said that no, there's no gyroscopic mechanism in there keeping Boba Fett upright. He just climbs in upside down.
No.
However, I am
for the comfort
baffled.
Of his prisoners only.
Right. I am baffled that they took that concept and applied it to the inside of the ship, but not the pilot. That just is mind blowing to me. I can't understand why they would use the concept, but not in the ways that people talked about
it
being
used.
Strap
in.
I also love that the only reason you would need that is if gravity is in fact necessary in space. Like, I love that. This means that not only do they have gravity in these ships, they have to. They can't get rid of the gravity.
Yeah,
like,
it's there.
As soon as you're in a ship, the gravity is present.
it's like a
side effect of space travel.
They've had ships fail in so many different ways, but never does whatever generates the gravity fail.
Nope, never. Well, it can't. It's part of the ship.
There was an almost fan service, and my heart leapt when it happened, when the Mandalorian and Boba Fett walk into the bar on that water planet.
Oh,
and
boy.
Everyone looks at them, and I was just like, my heart leaping, like, oh, I am in awe, and I can see it on their faces.
I know.
They're like, that is a Mandalorian with Boba Fett, like the two of them together. This is insane.
Yeah.
And then they ruined it by showing that there's like three Mandalorians just chilling in there.
I know, just
already
sitting there. Just, this is the Mandalorian bar.
It's like, why were people so surprised to see them? Like, why did they have those looks on their face?
The only thing they could have done worse than that is like having Boba Fett get beaten up by some random nameless character.
And Bo-Katan has no excuse. I mean, the actor playing her is too young, but she was an adult in the Clone Wars. She would know who Boba Fett is.
Yes, she would.
She wouldn't recognize him as a clone trooper first.
No.
She would recognize him as Boba Fett first, before she ever even heard his voice.
Yeah, it's so stupid.
That just pissed
just
me
so
off
dumb.
So much. But I was just happy to see Boba Fett back. But then at the very end, when he goes and shoots Bib Fortuna and sits in that chair, I was like, oh no. Like, the only thing this could be implying is they want him to be a crime lord, and that doesn't make any sense.
It's the worst thing they could have done to the character. It's just awful.
So, that leads in the final piece of evidence. Filoni himself said, anything out there that resembles that visor, this is a direct quote from him, talking about Boba Fett's helmet. He says, anything out there that resembles that visor is just Boba Fett. So that's my final piece of evidence. The Mandalorian is just Boba Fett.
Okay. I don't know the context of that quote. So yeah, there you go.
It's just from the documentary. They're talking about the T-shaped visor and how iconic it is.
Yeah.
That's all he
said. It's pretty iconic. Before we wrap this up, I just want to say I am a huge fan of The Mandalorian.
Yeah.
I love The Mandalorian.
I love
The Mandalorian so much that I built my own entire Mandalorian armor cosplay outfit so that I could wear it just because I wanted to have it, just because I thought it would be so fun.
You weren't going to a convention?
I just built it to have it. I literally just wanted to have that. I've got an entire wearable fit to me Mandalorian suit of armor just so I can look just like Din Djarin if I'm ever feeling a little down. Because then I can realize that life could be much worse. Like, I could be, like, doing horrible mistakes all the time and ruining everyone's lives.
The first time you even whip out the Darksaber, you cut your own leg off, practically.
Yep. Yeah, just take a massive chunk out of your leg. It wasn't even like a super hard job. It was just like bringing some random guy from like a factory. It was like in a meatpacking factory. Man, okay. Well, that's not an episode of The Mandalorian, though. That's an episode of Boba Fett. But I just want to say I love The Mandalorian. So if Boba Fett became The Mandalorian, at least we got a really, really fun and iconic character. Nothing can deny that he is amazing and has had massive impact on the Star Wars universe.
Of course.
The most impact by far of anything Disney's done.
We still want to discuss the Book of Boba Fett. We're probably going to split this into two parts. So, and music for this episode is provided by Christine.
If you like what we're doing, make sure to check us out on Patreon. Every little bit of support really, really makes a big difference. You can check out our YouTube videos, leave a comment there. We always reply, and you know, it just makes us like super happy to hear what you think.
Until next time.
This is the way.
The popcorn isn't real.
The popcorn is the way.